Environmental Public Health Program upstairs, along with Joe Jackson, started mid-March. I'm overseeing the program on-site and giving water protection solid and hazardous waste.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I'm Roy Butler, and I don't really know where I do Chief of Operations. He's at the Chiefs Conference in Spokane.
All right, thank you. If you can take a moment and look over the meeting minutes or notes from March, since we did not meet in April. Results from the Board of Health hearings on inhaled delivery systems. Dr. Miller.
Great. So, for those of you, you've probably heard that in the news, but on April 29th, our Board of Health passed an ordinance that would require what we call inhaled delivery systems. Kind of a catch-all phrase. The ordinance actually has a definition for it that includes e-cigarettes and other so-called vaping devices. It requires these devices to follow, prohibits them from places where conventional cigarettes are prohibited, so indoor public places. The reason we use the term inhalant delivery systems is that as the technology changes and they come up with more devices, we figured that rather than just using the term e-cigarettes, because there's a lot of other devices, we would have a definition for inhalant delivery systems. So now their use is prohibited wherever conventional cigarettes are prohibited in public places in Clark County. And that applies, because it's the Board of Health, there have been questions about that. It applies to the incorporated, the cities, as well as the unincorporated areas. So the Board of Health has jurisdiction over the entire county, not just the unincorporated areas. I know this question has come up from, I think, one of the cities raised it with me, and it basically applies everywhere, including Battleground. So we had, there were actually two hearings because the vaping community turned out in full force. There was, at the first hearing on the 22nd, we had an hour for this, and people were lined out in the hallway as well as picketing outside. It was a really good process, though, because the people from the vaping community had an opportunity to be heard. And actually, the board revised the ordinance to address their concerns, which basically said allowed an exception for the use of these vaping devices or inhalant delivery systems. The exception is they could be used exclusively in stores that exclusively sell inhalant delivery systems. So the only place they could use these in public would be to sample them in a store that only sell inhalant delivery systems. So you couldn't sample them in a 7-Eleven, for example, or some other store where other things are sold. So we figured that was a reasonable compromise in terms of protecting the public. So you can't use them in movie theaters, grocery stores, places of employment, or anything like that. So we thought that was great. We had some really great testimony at the hearing. Healthy Living Collaborative was there. BAC was well represented. Paul was there, and Bryce, you guys were phenomenal in terms of giving the Board of Health the representing Public Health Advisory Council, giving the board some information on this. Your perspectives actually helped get this ordinance passed. So I think it's an incredible success, and couldn't thank you guys more for doing that. So. I don't know if you want to talk about your experiences in doing this and representing FAC.
Well, I'm just glad to see that we were successful with our endeavors. Thank you very much, Mr. Childers, for getting up there and speaking alongside of me. It was kind of a bit of a rambunctious day with the VA community turning out as they did, but it was nice to see the democratic process work out. Thank you.
Right. It was very interesting. But we were somewhat limited in our time. We were only allowed a few minutes to speak, so we had to get to the nitty gritty and get across what we specifically wanted to impress upon them. And I thought it was interesting that with one of the comments I did with regards to the restaurants association with the restaurant people, and then I think Jamie picked up on that because I understood her to say in her comments that she says, if I was in a restaurant, I wouldn't want anybody vaping beside me. So I thought that was good. Yeah, but it was interesting. And I was very impressed with the orderly fashion that most of the people with the vaping community presented themselves. I thought that was very good.
They're very strategic.
Yeah.
Well, I thought they made a compelling argument.
They did.
In terms of the stories, the personal stories that they told, and the family stories of getting people off of cigarettes, and the support that goes on, and which I was absolutely unaware of, before hearing the vaping community talk about the support system that exists in those vaping shops for people who want to get off of cigarettes and go to a what we think right now is a less toxic form of nicotine. But I mean, I think they were very, very, very organized, and they made compelling arguments, and I think the democratic process worked.
Any other? I'm thrilled that we're one of the, I think we're one of four jurisdictions in Washington State now that have warnings like this. I think the others are Grant, Tacoma, Pierce, and I may be leaving one out.
Seattle?
King?
I think. Maybe.
Anyway, it's a wonderful accomplishment.
Have there been any calls about it that we're aware of, or concerns, or anything that's come up?
No, and I think, given the process that worked out, I think that we didn't hear. The only thing I saw is no outcry from the Beijing community or anything like that. So I think it went really well.
And I was very impressed with Bryce's delivery. He's quite a speaker, let me tell you.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on to the ACES update, Community Foundation, and Kaiser Permanente Grant. So we.
I have a very brief update on that. We don't have a lot of information, but I'll share with you. Currently, right now, the Community Foundation, we should have an answer back this week whether or not we were successful in our request to partner with Community Foundation. And that grant was to support the work that's going on in Battleground around the AWARE grant that EST 112 was able to secure, and the work they're doing there. And it was actually to help to do some trauma-informed training for a number of different folks, so the teachers, law enforcement, etc. So that's what that grant is requested for. We should know again this week if we were successful with that or not, and we'll be reporting back to you. The second grant we have is the HEAL, Healthy Eating and Living Grant with Kaiser Permanente, and we were actually asked to be in the second round of those. We have a meeting with Kaiser Permanente and our partners, our community partners, on the 26th. We're going to be going over some specific questions and working together to put the direct focus of what we're going to be really working on with that particular grant, and Kaiser is helping us put that strategy together. They're doing that with all of the folks that have made it to the center at this point. So that is actually on the 26th. Kaiser's focus is really on dose. So what they're looking at is, from the individual level up to the policy level, how is what they are funding working together to make an impact? So that's the focus that Kaiser has right now. So that grant is, again, it's going to be, I believe we're going to, I'm sorry, I should get the exact details, but I believe we have to have our presentation into them by the end of June, I believe. And I can get back to you and let you know the exact date.
Any other questions or comments in regards to the pending grant or community foundations update? Okay, we'll move forward to the public health and action update from Diane Welch. In speaking with public health staff last week, we really wanted to focus on or have a spotlight on health. For public health in action, and have a 5 or 10 minute dedication if the agenda allows. Obviously, this week it does. And so, welcome, Diane. Thank you for the update.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to come and share with you. I'm a public health nurse. I work in the communicable disease unit here at the health department. And one of the major focuses of public health, of course, is the protection of the public from communicable diseases. Our job in the communicable disease unit is to investigate communicable diseases when they come out. The local labs, doctor's offices, clinics, hospitals are responsible to report to the communicable disease unit in their local health jurisdiction when they have a reportable communicable disease. So back in January, we received a call from the VA infection control team right here on our own campus of a potential influenza outbreak at the VA transplant lodge just down the road here. As a matter of fact, we walked to that every day. The transplant lodge is kind of like a motel for people waiting for their liver and kidney transplants. And each transplant recipient or potential recipient has their own room with beds in it. And staying with them is a caregiver. It can either be a family member or a friend, but somebody who is going to help take care of them both before, while they're waiting for their kidney or liver transplant, and then after their kidney or liver transplant. And since the VA here in Portland is one of the nation's leading transplant centers for veterans, we had people there from literally all over the country. And they do a very good job in trying to prevent infection. So they had all the hand washing and infection control techniques in place there, because this is a very vulnerable population. After they receive that transplant, they are on immune suppressing drugs, which means their immune systems essentially can't fight back like our immune systems can. Despite all that, they had one of their residents, one of the VA clients, come down with lab confirmed influenza. And according to the Washington State Department of Health guidelines, one case of influenza in a long-term care facility, which is how we categorize this, is an outbreak. So one case constituted an outbreak, and that's why they got in touch with us. And because they're such a vulnerable population, it needed a very rapid response to prevent that from becoming more patients. In addition to the veteran that became ill with the flu, his caregiver also was demonstrating symptoms of the flu. So they actually moved those folks out of the lodge and into a motel to separate them from the other vulnerable members of the community. They called us to see if we could help them, because they could give antiviral medication to their own clients, to the VA clients. They could give medication. Most of them were already vaccinated, but in the event of an outbreak in long-term care, the treatment guideline is to start them on antiviral therapy. So they'd already started to treat the veterans there, but since their caregivers are not vets, they didn't qualify for the medication from the vets, and they called us to see if we could help them out with that. We weren't entirely sure we could do that either, because we don't keep a drawer full of antivirals. As it turned out, we actually do keep a drawer of antivirals. So what a good deal that turned out to be. By 30 hours after they first contacted us, within 30 hours of contacting us, we found a source of antivirals. They come in little bottles, and you have to tear off tiny little labels and put on there the instructions for taking it. We had to create some documents for interviewing people before we hand out drugs to them, make sure they're not taking anything that would interact with those drugs, that they don't have any allergies. And so we had to put together the forms that we needed, walked over to the transplant lodge, took a look at where we could do this, made sure that flyers got out to everybody, and two of us went over with a box of antiviral medication and the forms, and folks lined up, and we got through 17 of the 20 caregivers in that first day, within 30 hours of having received that notification. And then there were about four folks that we missed. We made arrangements for them to come to us since it was so close by, and that way they could kind of come on their own time. They would come up here, we'd come out, meet them, take them to one of our little treatment rooms, and we'd give them all their information. So we picked up another four caregivers in the following 3 days. And so we ended up successfully giving prophylactic medication to all 20 of the caregivers in there. By January 15th, we got the initial call on the 5th. 10 days later, we checked in with the infection control team at the Veterans Administration. We had no ongoing transmission, no secondary cases, and that's the result of our intervention, because it was a very bad flu season since we had such a poor mismatch with the vaccine. And the leadership team asked us to share this because it was such a good example of how the public health entity can be responsive to the needs of our community and to our most vulnerable populations, and certainly these folks were one of the most vulnerable populations we have in the community. And if there are any questions, I'd be glad to attempt to field those. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Good work.
Sure. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
He's,
We're getting him in my room.
They're homemade and delicious. Because of our strict land use policies, they're forcing businesses to come here and take advantage of the abundant land, and people who are in power are all too happy for the job creation to dash all the rural lands and the agriculture.
So I want you to get out here and do the whole.
Are you feeling bitter toward me?
No, I'm feeling the business. No, I guess it's just a bunch of dead air.